NFL Show, part of the Mojo Sports Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mojo Sports AFL Show, episode one for 2024. It is your host, Maggie O'Connell. I'm a new host, and aren't we all excited for the footy season? Just quickly, I'd like to introduce my sporting background. So yeah, my name is Maggie O'Connell. I am very passionate Essendon fan. I did have no choice. Just got thrown a jersey and just worn it ever since. So I'm currently studying sports management at Griffith and have been working in the sporting industry for around 2 years now, working with AFL Queensland, Gecko Sport, and completing an internship with Unisport Australia. I'll flick it on to Alan, one of our panelists here. Go ahead.
Yeah, good day everyone, and thanks for having me on this year. Really looking forward to this 2024 AFL season. I'm a sports science PhD student at Macquarie University. I'm looking at the effects of fatigue in cricket in particular, but I have quite a large background in AFL footy. So I've been involved with sort of pathways programs with the Western Jets and a little bit through with the Murray Bush Rangers as well. Seeing a few sort of players come through, likes of Zach Butters, etc. So that's been quite good, but I've also been a league manager as well for local and football in North East Victoria, so both junior and seniors.
Awesome. We'll pass it on to you, Yuri.
Yeah, thank you, Maggie. Yeah, my name's Yuri Bilsich, back on the Mojo Sports Network AFL Show for a second straight season. It's really good to be back on and had an absolute blast last year. So my current role is, so I graduated with a Bachelor of Comms and Media, majoring in journalism. So currently I'm a sports writer for the Inner Sanctum, and I've been doing that for the last 7 months. Thank you to Jack Hudson for giving me the opportunity to do some writing and really get me out of my comfort zone and do some feature interviews, which has been a truly tremendous experience, and interviewing a number of different CEOs from the NBL to the WAFL, which has been an enriching experience. I also am an NBA panelist as well for Mojo Sports and been doing that for just over a year. So yesterday was exactly 1 year since doing the very first NBA show and since joining Mojo. So it's been, again, really worthwhile, and just learning from other people, which is, I think that's the biggest takeaway too. If I am able to learn from other people, then that'll just only help me grow. And also I run my own Substack blog account, just over a year since I set that up as well. So basically right on the AFL, NBA, NBL, done a few tennis ones, the Matildas last year during the fanfare fever when the Matildas were absolutely flying along in last year's Women's World Cup. So no, it's been fantastic and can't wait to chat to both of you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. We are going to get straight into it. I'm very excited for this. So, Alan, I reckon you might start here. Opening round thoughts, what do you think of it?
Well, sitting on base up in Sydney at the moment, I think it was pretty damn good for both, I think especially GWS and Gold Coast. Their exposure was definitely heightened slightly. But I think the AFL had a little bit of a problem with bringing it in. I mean, they did spruik that it was going to, you know, come in under the curtails while NRL was away overseas a bit, but of course all the teams were back and playing here, so I did get a little bit squashed with the media, but it was, did have the purpose. I mean, they felt great crowds, so from that end it was fantastic, and the games were pretty good too and nice and competitive. So for that end I think it was quite successful, but maybe didn't quite live up to the potential they probably wanted it.
Yeah, also a great turf as well, Alan. I think that's the big part, not having games in Victoria and sort of being left if you're starved if you're Victorian as well, having no footy there just for that opening round. But I think that opens the showcase of opportunities for, as we saw, Queensland, New South Wales hosting the opening round. And I think that's where the accommodation flexibility comes through for the ensuing, however long, most likely going to stick with this as a mandatory thing from now on. But either be WA, South Australia, or South Australia, Victoria, South Australia, Queensland. There's all these viable options that the league do have on offer. And of course, as we've seen with Gather Round since that was introduced last year, has also been a raving success. But I think also too, crowds. And that's the thing, when you only have four games, right? And two of them in Queensland, two of them in New South Wales, they're going to get at least a good widespread amount of coverage, even though the NRL absolutely dominates in both Queensland and New South Wales. But the way the Giants played on Saturday night, and of course them falling that point short of a grand final, and Gold Coast with really big hyping expectations, right, with Damien Hardwick at the helm as the Suns coach, I think it really does sort of bring across this attention that's really needed. And I think that's something that's a garnering success in its own right too. And I think you can't really fault that in a way. And it's a, again, it's a real positive just to tie it in all together.
Yeah. So how was it up in Queensland, Maggie?
See, I thought opening round was very successful. I think that obviously up in Queensland here, For the Suns and also the Tigers as well to go head to head. I'll call it the Dimmers Cup, but I thought it was great, but I think it should continue. I believe I thought it was really successful. You know, I would love to know in the future, you know, with these rivalry games, I can't really see Gold Coast and Richmond being a rival for too much longer. And I'd also love to see some Sunday footy. I would love to just kick up my feet and you know, watch a game like, sorry to be biased here, but Essendon Hawthorn, you're going to get, you know, a lot at the G. So I really believe that they should add a Sunday footy game, which will be really great. But I think it was really successful overall.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is like, I think having the clean air for it is great. But in a way, a bit like Gather Round, it probably could be transferred across maybe to another time throughout the year. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Something like, say, June, July, sort of school holiday type of period of time, that might be a perfect time to like, get the buyers coming through where you sort of can go over like a few days, but then still then have a couple of days in Melbourne games where you can sort of flow through. That might be something a bit beneficial, but it's coming from a sort of Melbourne background, especially with the Richmond Collingwood. That opening game is really synonymous and able. You have a huge crowd going for the G. You have a real build-up. And that this year I feel is lacking in a way, especially down there. And that's probably a bit way the maybe Essendon Hawthorn on Sunday might sort of break it a little bit. But, I mean, it's a teething issue. So, I mean, who sees what the AFL will do sort of next year?
Yeah, hopefully it continues, hey? Will we preview the games? I think we're going to start with Melbourne and Sydney. I thought it was a bit of a scrappy game to start. I was really thinking, I was sitting on the couch and I was like, is this opening round going to be any good? And I was watching the Melbourne-Sydney game and I was just, yeah, I think, you know, it was very, very scrappy to start. Brody Grundy, absolute champion he is. I loved Nick Blakey off halfback, but it was great to see Clayton Oliver back out there. I think he's been through quite a lot, as we know, and the media love it. But I think I'd love to hear your opinions on the Melbourne-Sydney game.
Yeah, it was definitely scrappy to say the least, Maggie. And I think the conditions, it was already well talked about too. It was a little bit dewy in a way. So it made the ball really difficult for players to get a hold of. And Christian Petrarca, who was on AFL 360 last night, spoke about it too. I think he had one passage there. I think it was about 7 minutes left in the first half and he was on the left wing and he fumbled the ball a couple of times. And thinking, normally for Track's ability and Track's superstar, and that he would just pick it up one-handed, but he just had the fumbles during that particular sequence of play. But again, as Alan and I spoke off air before this episode, Melbourne's inside 50 entries just continue to haunt them. And unfortunately, since 2019, they get their big supply of 450 entries. And we saw that in the game against Geelong 5 years ago where they had 72 entries in, yet they only kicked six goals and got belted by 80 points. So it just reflects really just horribly in a way too that they still haven't been able to address those woes. And even though Bailey Fritsch stamped his presence in the game too, and he probably should have at least gone back and had a set shot in the first quarter, decided to play on with a snap and missed it to the right. Those ones, you've just got to go back and take the set shot, considering he's a tremendous set shot kick anyway, Bailey Fritsch. But I think if you look in probably a Sydney perspective as well and what they had to deal with without Luke Parker, skipper Callum Mills, Taylor Adams, their new recruit as well. He's at least out for the first month, right? And that whole depth that they've got running through there, Isaac Heaney just completely took the game apart. His work in the coalface, his clearance work and everything that I think he's always had this game-winning potential within him, shall I say, to tear apart a game. And we saw that on Thursday night. And it's no surprise that he's got that flexibility anyway when Sydney are a little bit thin in the midfield and really not to say they're thin in the midfield because they've got so much depth there that he can just cover in there and play a real big role. He can play in as a contested midfielder. He can play on the outside and absolutely slice you apart with his deadly right foot kicks going forward. And yeah, just an absolutely really good start for Sydney. And as you mentioned too, Maggie with Brody Grundy and what we saw, right? It was basically what we saw in those two dual All-Australian years in 2018-19, him effortlessly rucking in ruck contests. And I think what he did really well against Max Gorn was he didn't impede his run-ups, but he smartly used his physicality to get his teammates hit-outs to advantage. And his whole link in the chain, this is the other thing with Grundy too, which I don't think gets too much coverage, is his ability to link up with his teammates through the middle of the ground. And we saw that at Collingwood, and even when he was just an up-and-comer, I think 2014, 2015, when he really started to stamp himself as one of the top young ruckmen in the game. And again, we saw that in absolute space on Thursday night. And him having that number one ruck role once again, I think he's basically going to recalibrate back to his old form once more.
Yeah, no, I mean, Sydney now have almost a richness now in midfielders, especially with James Jordan coming across now. So they're their depth now with Heaney, Packley can roll through. It's quite up there now with the whole competition. So they've got absolute riches now, and they're definitely going to be a lot better for it.
Perfect. I do love Isaac Heaney. He is, in fact, in my Supercoach team. So I do love him. So he can just keep playing the way that he is. Also, we'll just jump over to Brisbane Carlton. Now, what a game, fellas. It was an absolute cracker. I do still think it was a bit scrappy, but what a game. I, in fact, don't like Carlton. Sorry. But they did play. Oh, it was just unbelievable to see the comeback. I've never seen it, except Collingwood, but we don't talk about that. I believe, truly, Harry Mackay, that is just a round of applause. You know, he, throughout the media, he just gets it, he cops it. So to see him stand up in that massive moment was phenomenal. I remember sitting on the couch, eyes were closed, and I said, please miss. But he absolutely slots it. How do you guys think about the game?
Yeah, it was a game of two halves, absolutely. Brisbane to start off with, they were absolutely scintillating. That ball movement, sort of their back half, I mean, Kitty Coleman to start with was electric. And Carlton just looked lost. But then that halftime break, and I think it's really through that those key forwards in Kerno and Mackay where they actually started, you know, dominating that sort of back area for Brisbane where they just couldn't really rebound that ball back anymore because they were sort of just locking in there, taking a couple of big marks. And Kerno, especially those couple of goals in a couple of minutes, like really got that momentum swung straight to the Carlton side and they were able to build that throughout the game. And then their clearance work with Cripps, et cetera, really got going. So that 46-point comeback, like that's... Mm-hmm. up there is one of the best games you're going to see, especially start of the season. Like, that was a really good game and they played really well. But, I mean, you got to think back to Brisbane, though, with Coleman sort of going down injured just before halftime, where that has a little bit of an impact on their second half, where that sort of, you know, they go into the halftime rooms, they sort of know that injury is occurring. But on the flip side, you've got Doherty, too, does the same thing and sort of don't know about it. He comes out at a couple of sort of goal-saving moments on the put in the line, put his body there, even on just one leg. Is quite admirable in a long way.
If you have said that first half of last season, Carlton trailing by the best part of 46 points, you've absolutely had zero hope in them coming back from that margin. But to see the sheer amount of resilience that the Blues went through as well, and I think to really put it in perspective, those goals to David Cunningham and Charlie Curnow definitely gave the team belief. Trimmed that margin from 46 down to 31 at halftime. And you could see steadily as well, I think within the whole game plan, so we saw Brisbane just chip apart Carlton's structure, right? And it was Carlton doing the same thing to Brisbane in the second half. They're all finding the loose man unchecked and launching their attacks from the middle of the ground. And it was just a completely different picturesque story in that behalf. And it's something that I think is a really big essence within footy is that once you find that little touch of momentum and you're able to get the game on your terms, as the Blues did, right, it makes it so difficult to arrest the momentum. And we haven't seen Brisbane fold as much as at the Gabba, right? And they didn't lose a game at the Gabba all season, although Adelaide were 5 points shy of beating them, I think, back in round 22 last season. But yeah,
it's this is for the first...
In the first time since round 9 of 2013 that Carlton have won at the Gabba. And it says a lot. I think they lost their last 8 games at the venue there and most of them were by big margins, right? And just completely blown out of water in the first half. But I think also the role that George Hewitt did on Lachie Neale, and yes, both of them cop fines. And I heard on one particular podcast that Hewitt should have been suspended. Well, if you take into account, that was Hewitt's first offence, so you can't suspend him in that regard. And although it wasn't a great look, it was still, you have to put that into consideration. But also Blake Akers was really prominent, even early on when Carlton weren't getting the game on his on their terms, shall I say, and he was still having an impact even through middle, even they had to throw him down back as well as that plus one in the way too when Sam Doherty unfortunately did his knee for the third time in his career and really wish Doc a speedy recovery too because he doesn't deserve it. He's been through enough as it is. And I think Charlie Curnow's impact, as you talked about too, Alan, that was big too. Just him towering his presence throughout and kicking those majors when it was required. And Jack Carroll, when he came into the game and the East Fremantle product, and he definitely didn't look out of place one bit whatsoever. And it's that depth that really shines through. And Zach Williams, first game back since round 23 of 2022, 18 months on the sidelines with an ACL injury. Yes, he had one bad blunder, and you can't fault him for that in the first quarter where he decided to square the ball back into the middle and coughed it up, which led to a Brisbane goal. But his run and dash is going to be so instrumental, taking that pressure off Adam Saad in season 2024. And it was just, one of those just phenomenal performances. And when you look back, say 99 prelim finals, the other one which comes to mind, but it's the way to start on a winning night, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, definitely on probably a pretty good season, I think, ahead for Carlton.
Yeah, I think they're going to be up there. They are, in fact, in my top eight, but they're going to be very deadly. We'll move on to the Gold Coast Suns and Richmond. That was a very interesting game. I did think Richmond were going to come back, to be honest. Don't know about you guys, but I did think for a second. I was like, all right, Dima, you need to get your boys in line. But I did think, I did see the way that the Gold Coast Suns did move the footy. You can kind of see the 2017 Richmond style playing a footy, that front handball and that dash and run, especially Will Power off halfback as well. He's an absolute jet. Took Miller, obviously. And I love the way that Noah Anderson goes about it as well. He's just a bull in there. But yeah, how did you guys find it?
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, as a Richmond supporter, I'm very attuned to what Dimmer's got in his game plan. That's quintessential Richmond, but with probably a stronger clearance midfield with Rao. I mean, he's 20 clearances worth, phenomenal. And the tap work. Yeah. I think the tap work of Witts was probably undersold as well. Some of his just hit outs to advantage were just, you couldn't defend it in a way. Some of them were just fantastic. And then the spread from then from Took and Anderson, the running back of Powell, you can start to see like a real strong nucleus of that Gold Coast team that's going to take that club quite a long way. And then their connection inside 450 was probably they're going to be there. Sort of iffy bits in terms of this season, see how well they can sort of connect that midfield to the forward line. But King and Lukosius were able to just get onto the end of some beautiful inside 50 passes. That's probably a bit down to the lack of pressure from Richmond. Maybe they'll be a little bit caught up in the sort of moment of having played against Dimmer, especially in that first half. But that ball movement was quite, you know, quintessential Richmond sort of 2017, 2019 era, where it's like you can slingshot off that back line, forward pass out of that middle center square and just move that ball as quick as they can. But they still had that tempo as well, which is quite a good thing to see, especially this team. They're going to have a bit of their ups and downs. Like their second half was a bit down, but then you're going to have that for the first 6-10 weeks where they're not going to click for the full game. But that their absolute best, though, is that's what we're going to see, though, throughout the entirety of the year. So I think in there, yeah, it was quite a good show for their first game.
Matt Rao's game was just incredible, right? 33 disposals, 20 clearances, 26 disposals. He's only one of two players to have 20 more clearances. Paul Salmon had 22 back in around 13, 1998, Hawthorn against North Melbourne. And even Matt Rao broke his own contested records disposal again once more. He had 23 against the Bulldogs last season, I think 22 against North Melbourne earlier in that year. And it was just phenomenal. His whole work, feeding out to Noah Anderson on the outside and just his whole impact. And we saw that right in the first three games of his AFL career. And unfortunately, the injuries here and there sort of hit his impact in a way too, from what we really saw. And yeah, there were probably talks that Anderson was ahead of him. But after what we saw today, right, he's just that extra just stability linchpin in a way too, in the coalface. And it really gets those guys on the outers we mentioned too. Even Took Miller can play inside and outside. And that's the, I think, within the whole riches of the Gold Coast midfield now, I think this is probably the deepest that's been. That's probably not an understatement to make. But also, too, I think with their backline is super solid as it is, and Sam Collins, since he's arrived from the VFL, I think he played for Werribee, won their best and fairest, and he just really gets beaten. And moving Jack Lukosius 4-2 and having that extra prong attack there with Ben King, and it just makes for an absolute nightmare if you're opposing defences, right, and having to defend guys who are 198 to 201 centimetres. And when you put on top Levi Caswell, who can play as that third tall forward if Dimmer does look down at option for the upcoming round, then yes, they've got the list to really replicate Dimmer's game plan. And he even said that too, right? The 80% of the premiership team's already there when he first became coach. And it makes sense. Now the biggest part is as well as consistency, because we've seen the Suns over years get to really good starts midway through the season, right? Even season 2014 was probably their best chance of making finals, right? They were 7-4 at one point. They beat the Western Bulldogs. And then Gary Ablett does his shoulder and that Brett McCaffrey tackle about 5 weeks later, and their season derails from there. But they don't rely, that was back then, they had to rely on Gary Ablett, but not anymore. Just in case the Took Miller gets injured, they've got options there too to really cover for his absence. And it was just blazing stuff to see, right? 67 points ahead early on and just absolutely caught Richard on the back foot. But yeah, it's saw that fatigue as well, and those lapses in concentration, I think, now going to be real predominant key for the Suns to sort of curb if they really want to make it deep and make it to their inaugural finals appearance, right, for the first time in club history.
Yeah, they're going to have those problems throughout, especially the start of the season. They're going to have some games that they absolutely beat some teams, upset some teams that you probably don't expect them to do, but then they'll probably drop a couple here or there just because they're inconsistent, especially with a new game plan under a new coach. It's going to take a little while to embed in properly.
You know what? I think they do have the list, truly. Being up on the coast, I see a little bit of behind the scenes, a little bit, because I do work with AFL Queensland. So I see a little bit, but I seriously think they have the list. I think these academy guys coming in as well. Jed Walter is one. He's going to be an absolute animal down 40. He's going to be very hard to beat. I'm not exactly sure how old he is, but he, like, it's incredible by the way he goes about it. His size, it's actually very scary to see him in person. His size, absolutely massive. But I really do hope the Suns, you know, I've been saying it for years, but I just really hope they just continue to get better. And I think they've got the list to do it. So fingers crossed they have a fantastic year this year. Hopefully, maybe see them in the eight.
Yeah, they definitely won the Smokies.
Definitely. We'll jump to a great game that I could chuck on repeat because Collingwood lost. Giants and Collingwood. I did love watching this game. I was actually watching it with a friend of mine who is a mad Collingwood supporter. So to see, her have a bit of tears in her eyes was pretty cool. Callum Brown kicking 5, Jesse Hogan kicking 4, and Brent Daniels kicking 4 as well. And then obviously Toby Green kicking 1 from the boundary. That was just insane. I do love the way that the Giants go about it. I love watching them play footy. I love their team song, obviously. I think everyone does. I just love the way they go about it. They've got a really great chance to, you know, to bring home that cup to Sydney. I really truly believe that they were just a pinch away in that prelim final, which I was in fact there, unfortunately. I had to walk out of the MCG here in Collingwood, and that was not good. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Giants-Collingwood game.
Yeah, no, that was, yeah. I mean, apart from the Brisbane Carlton, that was definitely, I think, the game of the round, apart from that. GWS, I had really high hopes of this year. Where they finished last year was, in a way, eerily to what Collingwood did the previous year. Mm. And the fact they started this year defeating the reigning premier in such an emphatic way, I think has them in a really good stead this season. I mean, you look at the performance of Tom Green in the middle. He was sensational. He's got his game, to another level this year, no doubt. I mean, last year he absolutely stamped himself as an A-grader. But this year he's going to have that. I think the consistency of his body's matured properly. He's an absolute bull in there. I mean, you think of him like the Patrick Cripps, but I think he's probably got another level that maybe Patrick Cripps even doesn't even have. That's the potential I see in Tom Green. And that just feeds then into the likes of Callier being a bit more of an outside player and his skills with Whitfield, as well as now Lockie Ash running off the half back line. That's just started to cut through Collingwood. And that lack of pressure Collingwood had this game is definitely not at the premiership level they had last year. And that's probably a bit of the opening game sort of problems they had. But they were just sort of slicing through Collingwood. I mean, Collingwood had having probably the same number, if not more, inside 50s, but just the quality of the inside 50 entries that GWS had and getting onto the likes of Hogan and even Kadiman, as well as Brown kicking 5, you could just see that they were just such quality entries that they couldn't defend against them. And the overlap handball, that Richmond pressure was exhilarating to watch. It's like, yes, this is Richmond 2019 in a way, watching what was actually happening. So there's definitely a Richmond flavour coming through with that coaching a panel there. So yeah, it was good to watch. And they've definitely got, a good stead this year to push towards that premiership.
The biggest question too, as well, coming out from that game is, can the other 17 clubs implement what the Giants did on Saturday night, cutting through Collingwood's defence, right? And we don't normally see Darcy Moore being caught out in the back foot, right? On the back foot, should I say. And basically the goal square being unattended, or Jesse Hogan or Callum Brown, as we saw, leading up for uncontested marks, because Collingwood were able to get their fair share, but it didn't feel as damaging as what the Giants were able to do when they went inside 50. And to really put it, 18 goals, 6 for 9 really tells the story, even though the Magpies had their goal-kicking opportunities in the first half and wasted, I think they were 6 goals, 10 at the main break, and they didn't kick a goal in the third quarter. And that was pretty much where the Giants absolutely tore the game to shreds. And definitely think their game plan and their style matches with Collingwood anyway, because both teams play a very similar brand. It's slingshot out the back, perceived pressure. And it's not just full force, brutalized tackle, will just absolutely smash you to ribbons. They'll just create this pressure where it's not even there. But as the opposition, you almost feel as though they're a meter behind you and ready to pounce upon you. And you'll make the slightest mistake. And we saw that on Saturday night. And that was pretty much just sort of something as a template module, I think, that the other teams can replicate. I'm not saying maybe all of them, but the top four, top eight teams can really put into good use, because I think it's the thing, right? Even with Richmond and during their era, and how do you possibly curtail their slingshot chaos handball football through the middle of the ground? There wasn't really a way to stop it. And then other teams decided to employ the tactic. And did that work in a way? Maybe in some games, yes. And majority of others, they didn't. And it's just back to the Giants whole thing too. And Cornelio had, I think it was 30. Josh Kelly had, I think, 30 touches. Cornelio had about 31 or something. And just a whole sort of deep midfield in Richmond that they've got. And yes, they lost Callum Ward in that first half to a dislocated to AC joint, and this is more remarkable, right? He wanted to play out to the next couple of contests, and the docs were just basically saying to him, no, Callum, you need to get off the field, and sadly he's going to be out for what, the next probably 6 to 8 weeks, which is a real blow, because he's just aging like fine wine. He turns 34 early next month, and this guy is playing as though he's in his early 20s, and that's pretty much just what he's brought throughout his long and illustrious career. But that's the Giants, but on the Giants' behalf too, and just their whole game plan, and just be able to completely, absolutely shred Collingwood apart. I think it's just the perfect way to really sort of extract some sort of payback from what happened in the prelim last year.
100%. And I love the way, I seriously think Jesse Hogan is ready to just absolutely have a blinder of a year. I think he is just ready to just unleash, and, you know, guys like, as you said, Alan, Tom Green, I love watching him play. He's just a bull in there. And even guys like Lockie Ash as well. I thought he played, I think everyone is just playing their bit. Everyone's just playing their role. I know it's very cliche, but everyone's just buying in. They have full trust in each other. And you can see that on the field as well. And I think I just love the way that that Richmond style of like pressure and everything. I absolutely love watching them play. And we will move on though. That is a wrap for opening round. Loved your opinions, guys. We'll go on to early predictions. Top eight, bottom four, and why. I'll start with my top eight. I've got GWS, Sydney, Carlton, Brisbane, Collingwood, Adelaide as a smoky, Port Adelaide, and I have to put Essendon in there. I'm sorry, I had to do it. I feel bad, but I just have to do it. And my bottom four have to go with West Coast, Richmond, North, and Hawthorn. But I'd love to hear what your guys' top eight and top four and bottom four, sorry, are.
Essendon would be a no.
Come on. Now we've got great recruits. Come on.
I think for me, the top eight will be Brisbane, GWS, Carlton, St Kilda. St Kilda, I think, is the smoky for me, would be a top four. I'll have a look at their, I think their half-back line, their wing, that ball movement that sort of Ross Lyon's been really preaching. I think that's going to be their game-breaking, their defining moment this year. And I think that's going to be sort of what separates them. I think their sleeper that a lot of people are sorry not watching out for, because I think the game is starting to move towards that back sort of 50, transition towards forward 50 ball movement, and they've got the best in the game. Absolutely. I mean, you've got Hill, Sinclair, Wangley, Miller, Bonner, now Liam Henry's recruit, plus Darcy Wilson, who had a little bit to deal with the Murray Bush Rangers. And see, that potential, that sort of half back line, I think, is going to be their key defining feature this year. So we're one to look for. And they're probably running out of the top eight, but Collingwood, Port Adelaide, Sydney, and Adelaide to finish in the eight properly this year. They should have been last year.
Yeah, so my top eight, I did this a few weeks ago, but top four first, I got Collingwood, Brisbane, Sydney and Carlton. And then from fifth down to eighth, this is all in order. So Melbourne fifth, sixth, I've got the Giants, but no surprise they finished top four this season. Seventh, Port Adelaide, and eighth, Adelaide. Just after what happened last season for the Crows, the disastrous goal review, which, well, should have been a goal right to that final minute against Sydney. And just, I think that whole spurring, I think motivation and that real intrinsic drive, I think, amongst the players, but extrinsically as well within the playing group, is going to absolutely galvanise them. And it was the same thing that happened to Carlton, the final round against Collingwood, right? Lose by a solitary point and have to really chew upon and ponder what happened over the course of that summer. And I think that's going to translate to Adelaide making finals. They'll win majority of their games at home. That's pretty much become an absolute cauldron. And it was a cauldron for Port Adelaide, right? When I think they first started playing the Adelaide Oval in 2014, and it was an absolute just jamboree at the Adelaide Oval, especially the Power fans there. But I think also for bottom four, West Coast have to be in there. I don't want to say Hawthorn on the way too, because unfortunately I've just been struck by bad luck on the injury front too, with James Blank going down pre-season with that season-ending ACL, even before playing just one solitary game this season. North Melbourne have to have in there, but if they win five or six games, then that's at least considered a success this season. And yeah, I don't know who to make as that other bottom four. Probably have to put Richmond away too, in the way there as well. But it's sort of really unknown because we've seen right since 2015, 2016 that bottom fours fluctuate in a way too, and top eights fluctuate, and it's very unpredictable.
Yeah, I think the team that's going to finish 15 is not going to be too bad. I mean, at the moment, I've probably got Fremantle in there as one of the options. So, I mean, as well, it depends on how badly it's like, maybe Melbourne could go. Like, if things go really badly there, they could drop that low, for instance. But at the moment, I have Fremantle there, but with the North, Hawthorn, West Coast, I think they're probably the three sort of main ones people have down that line. But I do expect North Melbourne to have probably win a few more games, if I saw 5-6, which would be a real positive for them.
100%. It was very hard to do. It was very, very hard to do. I think Fremantle, Jai Amos is a guy that can really rip games apart. He is an absolute gun. I've been watching a lot of Fremantles. I've been logging onto their website and like just seeing their practice matches. Nat Fyfe, I think he's definitely back. He is just, I've never seen him so big. He is just massive. He's a bull. But I think Fremantle are onto something here. I think they are going to be threatening in the future. I don't think yet, but I think in the near future, it should be very close for them rising up the ladder again.
Yeah, their young depth is pretty good.
Yeah, I think
also too, sorry to add upon, but also Neil Erasmus and Matthew Johnson, two of their young and upcoming players as well within the midfield. And Erasmus is an absolute tackling machine, and Matthew Johnson's basically in that prototype Fyfe-esque build, right? I think 193 centimetres, and we saw glimpses of his potential in the midfield too last season, and to complement Sarong and Brayshaw there too. They've at least got the nucleus to really go and really make somewhat of a dent into it. Just the question is, can they win enough games away from Optus Stadium? It's always been a question mark for a number of years with the Dockers. Play well at home, and then when they get to the MCG, so if they really get the Staggers or whether it's at the Gabba. But they had that fantastic win against Sydney last season at the SCG, right, in round 9. It was probably their best away win of the season, and especially the circumstances too, playing against the Swans, who, yeah, at that stage, they were a little bit up and down and still trying to find their form in a way too. But, yeah, I see them winning between 10 and 11 games. I think a couple of years ago, I had them finishing 7th and they finished 5th in 2022. Of course, they made it through to the semi-finals, which was their first finals win since 2015. So it's all there in terms of the young talent in that too and what they've got up for it. And Tom Emmett, I think, is a big one to look out for. I think during the practice game against West Coast, and he was a big part for Peel Thunder last season too, as part of Fremantle's alignment with Peel Thunder in the Waffle. And he had a really good grand final for the Thunder against the Sharks as well. His tackling pressure was elite, and we saw that too in that practice game against West Coast about 3 weeks ago. And he should definitely be a starter in Fremantle's best 23.
Yep, I love that. Rising star predictions. I've gone with Riley Sanders from the Western Bulldogs. That might be yours as well, but I love watching him play. Again, I've been logging onto the Western Bulldogs website and just seeing him just rip games apart, even in the intra-club games against themselves. He is just playing some incredible footy, and I can't wait to see him play throughout the year. But yeah, I love the way he goes about it.
For me, I'm going with Darcy Wilson, so a bit of left field.
Oh, yeah.
I've sort of watched him a little bit in his series juniors. I went to see him as a 14-year-old kid, where he was about 4 foot tall, but athletically gifted. But right now, he's, what, 6 foot two. He's prime for that wing role at St Kilda, but he's more than that. His skills of both right and left foot. I mean, his old man was Mick Wilson's, the talent manager for the Murray Bush Rangers. So he's been training like an AFL standard for like 5-6 years. So he's ready to play round one. He's been named round one, so he will be playing. So I expect him to have a really good year. And he's definitely one of the people, I think, he dropped a little bit lower than where he probably should have been taking the draft, or pick 16, 18 it was. So he should have been probably higher than thought he was a top 10 pick. And he's just talent alone. And he's just work ethic is up there. So I think he's definitely in the sort of Riley Sanders mold. So I'll be looking out for him this year.
I have Angus Sheldrick. That's my rising star winner. Claremont boy too. And you know, he's a little bit diminutive in the way in terms of the midfielders nowadays, but he's just hard at it. And we saw against Brisbane too, he kicked a couple of really nice goals as well to get Sydney back in that game. And it's just whole cleanliness by foot too, and his poise through traffic. And he rarely makes a mistake by foot. I think that's the big thing as well with him. And he earned a lot of praise during his playing days at Claremont too. And it really, I think that's why Sydney saw a lot of potential in him when they drafted him pick 18 back in 2021. And sadly, he had that ankle injury and had to undergo surgery. But with a full preseason under his belt, I think he can definitely make a big splash. Even with a deep Sydney midfield there too, I think he can really do a lot of damage, and we'll see where it really takes him.
Awesome. I also can't wait to watch Nick Watson, the Wizard. He seems so exciting. Especially himself and Jack Ginnivan as well. Them two on the MCG is going to be pretty special. But I still think Hawthorn are still a fair bit away to success. Coleman medal predictions. Now, I've got Nick Larkey from North Melbourne. I, again, love the way he goes about it. He's just leap up into the egg, takes an absolute hanger. Again, still think North Melbourne are still, I think in the next couple of years, maybe they'll find success. But I think Nick Larkey, I can't stop watching him. He's just an absolute jet. So,
yeah, I'm also on the Nick Larkey bandwagon. But yep. I mean, I think there's really only two options here. It's Kerno or Larkey.
Yes,
they're the only two that really can win it. I expect them probably to kick 75 sort of plus goals for the end of, by the end of this year. So they'll be the two I'll be looking out for.
Yeah, I've got Charlie Kerno taking out another common medal this season too. And of course, last year's finals wasn't the finals he'd hoped for, right? You know, kicked three goals in three games. But he's got a lot to sort of prove in terms of how far Carlton make it into finals this season too, and whether he's able to at least knock that little sort of, whatever you want to call that term, off his back, the little monkey off his back in terms of finals. And it's only three games anyway. But yeah, I think just during the season anyway. And we saw last year, right, those two games against West Coast where he just combined to kick 19 goals, right? And I think those 19 made out, what, his 81 goals for the season. And it's just, it's more remarkable, right? Just his whole comeback from those knee surgeries he had to endure. That game against St Kilda, I think it was round 20 of 2021. And he kicked that excellent goal from outside 50 as well. And you could just see just what it meant, not only to him, but what it meant to his teammates at the time. And we definitely didn't expect, as a Carlton fan too, to him to absolutely be back to peak Kerno before those injuries struck, right? That game against the Bulldogs in 2019 where he tore the game apart and kicked in a career-high six goals. And we thought, well, this combination of Mackay and Kerno will absolutely dominate. And that's already touched upon too, just those freak knee injuries as well that he just completely hindered him for probably at least those season and a half in a way, if you want to use it as that real basis for him not getting out in the field. But yeah, it's really remarkable, right? And I think you can absolutely see him kicking a big bag once more, and the supply that Carlton have then, I think with that more concise game plan that they built upon that second half of last season too, I think it's just going to fit in perfectly.
100%. And as we saw it at the Brisbane game, he was just, he absolutely killed it out there in the second half, especially. Moving on to the most impactful recruit for the year predictions. I've got Brody Grundy / Ben Mackay, because I obviously go for Essendon. But I think Brody Grundy, I just think Sydney haven't had someone like Brody Grundy in so long. Not only a great player, but I think he's just a great person for the club as well to have. And I think he is surrounded by such a great midfield. So I'm really excited to see Brody Grundy / Ben Mackay. I think he's going to be really solid in defence for Essendon. I think he's going to be taking the weight off Jordan Ridley's shoulders, as well as Zach Reid's coming in as well. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, there's a few recruits around that it's still a collective as well that could have a really impact for their teams. You look at something like the Zach Thatcher and et cetera, going to, you know, put our weights back line, see if that can then solidify that back six, which has been sort of the issue. But as well, though, keeping sort of St Kilda thing going, I think probably Liam Henry adds an extra element to St Kilda. I think he started to actually burst onto the scene of Fremantle. And I think having the tutelage of Ross Lyon is going to actually sort of develop into that next level, which he definitely has the talent to do so. So that'd be the one I'm sort of looking to see improve this year.
Also chose the same one as you too, Maggie, when doing the most, well, in terms of recruit of the year for the Inner Sanctum, and Brody Grundy, definitely. And that fresh start away from Melbourne, away from the spotlight in a way too, he can really focus being on the number one ruckman. And as showcased on Thursday night, right, it was Brody Grundy, All-Australian form right there too, just hitting, basically dominating Gordon in ruck contest too, getting hit as to his teammates on the silver platter. Him, as we spoke about earlier, linking up in chains and what he does really well too, basically access another midfielder and just having that assume responsibility, but also at the same time not having that uncertainty behind him in terms of whether I'm going to be dropped or whether I'm sort of the coach doesn't see me in his plans. So that's definitely not going to be an issue one bit whatsoever. And I think in terms of Sydney case as well, with their whole ruckman stocks too, because Tom Hickey retired at the end of last season, but sort of in that mold in a way too of Jason Ball, Darren Jolly there during the early 2000s with the Swans, and when Shane Mumford was there at Sydney in the early 2010s, just having that number one ruckman too, which of course he's going basking anyway because he was number one ruckman at Collingwood. But yeah, just I think to really put it all, it's just, yeah, for him, just having that fresh start, fresh opportunity once more too, and to really relish in the moment.
Yeah, and as well as like Sydney going for basically nothing too. It's almost like a free swing at like an all Australian ruckman. It's such a big positive for them, and he's definitely gonna have an impact.
Awesome. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you guys for joining me as panelists. Loved your opinions. Overall, thank you for listening, everyone, to Mojo Sports Network AFL Show Episode 1. Can't believe season 2024 is underway, to be honest. It's going to be a great year. I'm really excited. I'm excited to be the host once again. Something brand new for me. Make sure to follow Mojo Sport Network on Instagram and keep listening on Spotify. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you, Alan.